she's forging love in deep pits, dreaming about a premiership cup. We love our clubs, but they never win two flags in 100 years. That shit house, if you think we'll be insightful, clever, or just well researched, we're here to say that's not the case. We'll just go out and wing it. We are two guys, one cup.
Hello and welcome to Two Guys, One Cup Summer Edition. My name is Charlie Clawson and this series is My Club, the final My Club. Will there be a season two? Who knows? But we go out on a strong note because I have found my unicorn. That's right. I've actually found a Gold Coast supporter in the wild who is willing to come on the show. He's actor Josh McConville. I mean, you'd know him from everything. He's been in a ton of Aussie movies and TV. If you're an AFL fan, you might have seen him in the movie The Merger. Josh didn't grow up with the AFL. He grew up in Queensland following the Brisbane Broncos, but a lot of his mates followed AFL, and he decided when he was going to pick a team, it wasn't going to be the Lions, it would be the Suns. So this is a really interesting chat because you just find out what brings Josh back to the game and what keeps him involved, knowing that there's so much pain to come. And it might just have to do with a little kid from the Gold Coast called Matt Rowell. Anyway, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Josh McConville. Josh, so great to have you on the show. This has been a long time coming. I feel like if I'd tried to get the autograph of JD Salinger, it would have been less difficult than trying to track down an actual in-the-wild Sun supporter. So thank you so much for doing the show. I saved the best till last. Now, I have to just open with this question, and I think a lot of people who listen to the show will have the same one, which is why?
Why not? Look, I was a rugby league supporter, actually. I followed the Brisbane Broncos. I was born in Brisbane, but I grew up on the Gold Coast. I've never followed a Gold Coast team because they always fall and fail. And, I mean, every team, what, the Seagulls, the
Titans,
the Chargers. Titans are still there.
Are they?
But how long?
I just assumed they folded. Okay.
But even, like, Gold Coast United with soccer. Anyway, so when I moved to Sydney, all my friends in Sydney followed AFL and I sort of got into it that way. And I sort of didn't really have a soft spot for the Lions. And then the Gold Coast Suns came on board and I jumped on.
Was there any particular thing other than the fact that you are from the Gold Coast? Was it something about, you know, wanting to be anti the big boys in Queensland, like a bit of a fuck you to the Lions?
Not overly. No, it's more about, yeah, basically because I grew up on the Gold Coast and there's something about being a foundation supporter too, which I think is quite appealing.
Yeah.
Being there from the beginning. Yeah, that really stood out to me.
And so you said it was your mates who followed AFL. So did you get into it through them? Did you start going to games or watching games with them?
Yeah, it's actually AFL fantasy. I got right into that. So right. I got right into the stats, like CBAs, tackles, handballs, players, and salary caps. So it was sort of that got me watching every game and really following particular players. But I didn't actually have a team. So, yeah, I guess it was my friends. And AFL fantasy. Yeah.
And I suppose getting in on the ground floor, like you're saying, it makes sense for someone who's new to the game. You can sort of help be part of that club's kind of mythology. You know, like if you are jumping on board an establishment team, a foundation team, like there's 130 years of history that you've got to catch up on. Whereas, you know, you and the Suns are kind of learning the game together. How deep into sort of like AFL mythology or you know, legends of the game did you delve? Was there any kind of temptation to go to one of more of the established teams?
No. Never. No, I think that was always my upbringing. I went to a new school. I was a foundation student in the school and I like starting from the beginning and going through that journey and creating that mythology for myself, rather than entering it, I guess is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And so no, not really. There's always a risk, you know, you pick a team, you know, they're going to be shit for a long time. Mm. So the rewards won't come instantly. But so I did think about jumping on the Swans. But fuck, everyone supports the Swans.
No
one supports the Suns. So, you know, when we win, I'll be the only one cheering.
It's a cliche, isn't it? An actor in Sydney who follows the Swans. I mean, they're the darlings of New South Wales when it comes to the Battle of the Bridge. Yeah, I think it's...
I followed the Broncos too. It was like everyone follows the Broncos, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've been watching a bit of Making Their Mark, which is the Amazon Prime series, who are also sponsors of the show.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really interesting because I'd say that the majority of AFL fans, especially those in Victoria or, you know, WA, the further away from Queensland that they are, the less that they would know about the Suns. And there is this strange kind of – in the NRL – there is this kind of real parochialism around, you know, New South Wales teams and Queensland teams. And, you know, they seem to resist the kind of broadening or the nationalisation of the code. Whereas the AFL, you know, was much more embracing of, you know, the Sydney Swans and the West Coast Eagles and the Adelaide Crows. Yet for some reason, the Gold Coast Suns seem to piss everyone off. I don't know. I don't know if it's because... I mean, the logo looks quite corporate. Like, it looks like it was designed in a boardroom. It doesn't have that kind of, you know, grassroots footy club look to it. But also, I think...
A club song shit too.
Yeah, and the club song shit. I don't even know the club song. That's something I learned from the documentary. But it sort of felt like, you know, the impression from these outside people is that, well, this is just a cynical move by the heads of the AFL to try and, you know, stake a claim in Queensland. But then when you watch this documentary and you see, you know, Stewie Jew behind the scenes and you see, you know, all the people who are putting so much time and effort into the club, you realize that it is just a footy club. Like, it's not complicated in terms of, you know, the elements that you need to bring this, you know, to bring a success to a club. It's like you've got to have the right players, but you've got to have coaches who are passionate about it. I always talk about GWS. You know, when Alex Williams took me to a GWS game, I was expecting to see a bunch of people who didn't know anything about the game just there to look at the bright lights and whatever. But I didn't see that. It was actually genuine, passionate supporters who maybe they weren't brought up with the game, but they were really there to kind of, you know, soak it up and support their team. Would you say that Gold Coast has the same kind of supporter base?
It's difficult to say because I do live in Sydney, but the small amount of games that I've been to on the Gold Coast, we were getting flogged. And so there was less supporting rather than booing and a bit of spitting from what I saw. So I guess, yeah, it was quite passionate. maybe not in the right way. But then the games that I've gone to at, like, the MCG, I mean, I'm the only Gold Coast Suns supporter there.
Yeah, it must be crazy.
It's hard to sort of answer that because I haven't been – around it and privy to the winning passion on the Gold Coast, that Metricon. However, the online support that I see, yeah, it's super passionate. And I think a lot of us are still trying to learn the game. I'm not going to sit here at all and say that I know AFL. And I would say it's probably a generalization that there's a lot of Gold Coast fans as well that are probably thinking the same thing. Mm. So, the passion is certainly not, like, you know, at the Cattery.
But, yeah. But do you think if you could give me, like, I'm always fascinated by the culture of a club. What are you seeing in these online forums or, you know, interactions you're having with other Gold Coast supporters? Are they people who have switched from other teams? Are they people more like you who are kind of just getting on the ground floor?
I don't have any friends that I know that supports the Suns. So I don't really chat to any of them. but, you know, I just see it on, like, Instagram or you know, on their website. But, yeah, I mean, it's supportive. It's pretty basic. It doesn't strike me as that passionate. I think when we start to clock some more wins on the board, it will become more passionate.
I mean, it's so...
But it's such a small supporter base that it's hard to answer that question. I'm not sure. But the culture for an AFL team on the Gold Coast is always going to suffer because it's heavily NRL dominated. But I have hope.
I just wonder if, like, you know, it's, you could really sort of foment a us against them mentality, you know, that people think, like, when you watch this documentary, you know, Stewie Jew is very much about bringing it back to basics. Like, you almost feel like you're watching a suburban club, you know, he's really...
Yep.
he's putting a lot of the responsibility and the onus back on the players to take ownership of, you know, what the club's reputation and how they're going to be perceived. And, you know, there's a great line in it where he talks about, it's not really about, you know, wins and losses. We're not a wins and losses team. It's about the effort that you evidence. And even if you do lose. And so I feel like, you know, there was this kind of shift with when the Suns came in and they had all those amazing, you know, like Gary Ablett Jr. and these amazing draft picks. And it just felt like a foregone conclusion. It felt like a foregone conclusion. You're going to make finals, you know, just give it a few years. Those players will take C, but then never really, really happened. So then I guess what you're seeing now with the club is almost like, this is the real beginning. Like what you had then was just how they had to kind of bust into the AFL, but this is now the foundation for your club.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they've worked really hard at doing that. And the conditioning was always a big thing for me because so many players were getting injured. Like Jaeger was getting injured. David Swallow was getting injured. Gary Ablett didn't for the first few years until
his shoulder,
famous injury. But Presti was getting injured. Dixon was getting injured. Like all of our star elite players. So then that takes a lot of time to come back and find your rhythm again. But there is a small repetition that I'm seeing here now with Raoul going down, and we've just lost Butterick and Day, I think it is. So it's sort of happening again. And the Raoul shoulder thing was a very similar thing to Barry, wasn't it? And now he's PCL. It's so tragic.
It's devastating. I mean, we Will
so
and I
just hope we don't slip. I don't hope we don't slip back into, you know, when we first joined.
I mean, I think there was enough signs last year. Like even, you know, you had those three wins in a row, and then Raoul went down, and you were in a lot of games. Like I think there was five or six games where you lost by less than a kick, or at least a couple of kicks, which is always a good sign because that means, you know, your club's up for the fight. They just maybe don't have the maturity or the bodies yet to kind of compete with the big boys. But Matt Raoul,
the game against West Coast when Raoul went down, we still really fought hard and well right to the final siren. Except they were just too good for us. But
I mean, I think that the Matt Raoul equation is just so tantalizing. Like Will and I on the regular Two Guys One Cup, we just love Matt Raoul. Like I know we've only seen a glimpse of him, but like such a great start, but he's such a fascinating kid, like 18 years old, and the way he talks and the way he carries himself, like he's like this 40-year-old in an 18-year-old's body. And like I just want to learn everything about him because, you know, there's these articles with him, you know, that he has 52 Sharons, you know, that he's collected over his time.
I've seen that.
Junior footy days. And, you know, his favorite meal is chorizo pasta. And, you know, he's got all these weird superstitions. But, I mean, I think he's just such a great, like, it's great because you've got this marketing angle where you've got this kid who's so interesting, you know, and seems to be so humble. He's like an old-fashioned footballer, really, like a gentleman footballer, who's also like a complete gun. And I know when he did his PCL, like everyone was just so devastated because you just want to see more of him. Like you just want to see him out on the park, and I want to see him in front of cameras. I'm just hoping that while we won't see him on the park, the Gold Coast PR department just have him doing heaps of interviews, just lots of photos of him sitting on his 52 balls.
Yeah. What's his side hustle? The ball magnets, or you seen that?
No.
With him and Tom Mitchell and Lockie Neal. It's like this exercise program they've started.
Really? He's got a side business.
I forgot what it's called.
He's just so endlessly fascinating. Like it's just like for an 18-year-old. And if you ever hear him speak about the game, like there's a photo of him as a kid when he's 10 years old, you know, standing next to Chris Judd getting his photo taken. And he looks he looks younger as a 10-year-old. I mean, he looks younger now than he did when he was 10 years old. Like he looks like this little old man when he's 10 years old.
The feeling that I had when he went down with that PCL was a similar feeling. Gary Ablett's my favourite player for obvious reasons. But it was the same sick feeling I had when in the grand final last year, like in the first, 3 minutes when Gary Ablett went down and hit his shoulder again.
Yeah.
God, that was That was tragic.
I mean, the one hopeful thing you'd say about those two injuries, the shoulder and the PCL, is they're not like soft tissue, which can sort of be a hint to sort of chronic injury. They're more like just freak accidents, structural kind of things from impact. But you just don't want him to be one of those players who keeps getting injured. Like, there is just so much potential there. And, you know, he could be such a gold mine, no pun intended, for the Gold Coast. But that is the kind of player, I think, since Gaz left, you've sort of lacked that marquee person that you can not only lead on the field, but actually has marketing potential as well. If we could just go back to what you mentioned before about going to games, like going to the G as the only Sun supporter, can you take me through what that experience is like? How are you treated? How do people regard you as the lone Sun supporter at a game?
They're impressed, I think. If anything, I remember one game, it would have been a few years ago when Ablett was still playing. It was the Demons versus the Suns, and I was literally, and we won. And I was the only, felt like I was the only one in the G going, yeah, and singing our stupid song. But everyone is, I always got the feeling that everyone wants the Suns to win and they want them to do well. It's that underdog mentality. So I'm treated quite well, actually.
I think now
I come across that I'm quite ballsy to be there, like a lone ranger, you know?
Well, I think there is, like, I think as an entity, there are people who were kind of cynical about the Suns. But because that, like I said, that first era of getting all the gun players and the draft picks, because that has passed and now you are sort of doing what a legitimate football club does, which is sort of just go back to the draft and build things from the ground up. I think there is a fair bit of respect. Like, it's such an interesting case study to put GWS alongside the Gold Coast. And, you know, I heard Tony Cochran, you know, your president, talk about the GWS benefited mostly from having Gold Coast make all the mistakes, you know, that they that they could have made. So that you made all the mistakes, which gave GWS a guide on how to put their club together. But culturally, it feels like GWS took all those gun players, all those junior champions, and created this mentality of excellence, you know. What do you think happened at the Suns that it didn't gel in those first few years?
Well, I truly think injuries play a massive toll, like on confidence and gameplay. And I mean, from my memory, GWS didn't really get that many injuries, certainly not to their star players, like Coniglio, sort of getting injured a bit more now. But it seemed like a difference in conditioning. I mean, I'm not on the inside, but on the outside, I remember there was one time where, like, it was like a whole team of players had essentially been injured for the Suns early on, like after Ablett went down, year after year after year. And then we got like Malcheski one year and had like three knee reconstructions already. And then his knee popped again, obviously. I mean, that's just, to me, a conditioning thing. And I don't know. I think also the climate, living on the Gold Coast, obviously, would be different to living in Sydney. So the passion that we were talking about before would be quite evidently different. Harley Benner was snorting lines out on the out in Surfers Paradise. Carmichael Hunt was caught with bags in his pocket. I mean, you know.
Not a great culture. I mean, it's interesting.
Not a great culture.
What did you feel about the Carmichael Hunt? Like, obviously that was the Gold Coast version of Israel Folau going to the Giants. I mean, did you see it as having more potential than just being a publicity stunt to get, you know, league fans over to the AFL?
Yeah, I loved it. I thought he did quite well, actually, for his role. I mean, he just smashed people, but he kicked the winning goal for our first win, I think, against Richmond.
Against
didn't he?
Richmond, one of the all-time greatest kicks after the sirens that you'll ever see.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, that should have been the start of your club. Like, that's the kind of moment that, don't you reckon?
Yeah.
That could really launch a club. But yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, he had some background in AFL, I believe, like as a junior, had at least played. So he wasn't as far back as Israel Folau when it came to sort of picking up the game.
Yeah.
But then when you find out after the fact, like, you know, the footy trips and stuff afterwards, you're like, oh, well, maybe he was just there for a payday. Like, it feels like, you know, someone gives you that much money for 3 years.
What's the general consensus on Carmichael Hunt joining, like, in the wider AFL community?
I think everyone saw it as a publicity stunt, you know, much like the Israel Folau thing. But It depends where you come from. Like I am, I want AFL to expand. I love AFL and I think it's great. You know, I want Tasmania to have a team. I want them to play it. You know, I want Northern Territory to have a team. I want it to be played all over Australia. But there are some people who are purists, in inverted commas, who think that, you know, the game should go back, never change the rules. You know, they should stop expanding teams. They should stop relocating teams. And I just think that that's just not the reality of, you know, this is like a multi-million dollar industry, you know, and they have to, if you're going to compete against soccer, against the NRL, against union, you know, you have to do things like that, especially if you're going into the heartland. So I think there's a lot of people, if he had not had the end to his time at the Suns that he did, I reckon a lot of people would have been given a pass mark because he played, what, 30-odd games, had one amazing moment with the kick after the siren. So I think it would have been serviceable. But because of the calamity,
he had some big hits.
Yeah, totally. Well, his body type changed entirely as well. That's the thing that I feel is so underrated about what Carmichael Hunt did. Like, leave aside the off-field stuff, is he completely changed his physique and the kind of athlete he became. Like, you know, AFL players have to go from being collision athletes to being something more along the lines of boxers, you know, where they've got to have that combination of speed and power and endurance. And for some guy to do that, it's kind of like the AFLW. Like, I'm always, like, I scratch my head when I hear, you know, mainly men criticizing the AFLW. And it's like, most of these women play professional sport in a completely different code at the highest level and then come play AFL at the highest level. And you're going to criticize them, you know, for an organization that's only been around for 4 years. It doesn't make any sense. Like, you try and play two sports at an amateur level, let alone like the highest level possible.
What's some of the criticism?
Well, just like, you know, there's people who, again, it's this sort of footy purist thing that feel like, you know, footy should only be like for men, or it should only be, you know, a limited number of teams, and they should stop giving all these handouts to interstate teams. But I don't think that's the majority. I think that's just kind of like an old school mentality that is dying out.
It's called progress. You know, it's how we evolve. It's
100%.
It should happen in every asset of life. Yeah.
And so you said that Gaz was your favourite player. Is he your favourite player of all time? I mean, I know it's a short history.
Yeah, it is a short history. So, yeah, I'd have to say he is. Maybe now Matty Rowell, if he ever gets back on the field. But, yeah, he is. I mean, I've tried to look back on the history. Who's your favourite player?
I'm a Saints supporter. So I'd say my favourite player of all time, the Saints, is probably, well, it'd be either Rob Harvey or Nick Riewoldt for two different reasons. When I was 12 years old, after a game at Moorabbin, I won Rob Harvey's jumper in a footy club raffle. And so got to meet him and got the autographed jumper. And then when he played his 350th game, like 20 years later, I went up to him at his testimonial dinner and congratulated him on his 350 and said, "Now, Rob, back in 1991, when I was 12 years old, I won your jumper in a raffle." And he's like, "Oh, that's really cool." And then I said, "I've still got it, Rob." And I could just see his eyes widen and he sort of backed away from me, thought I was some weird kind of Stan type fan. But then Nick Riewoldt, just for what he did for that club. I mean, I don't know if you know much about the Saints history, but we are the most unsuccessful club in the history of the AFL. Been around for 135 years, won one flag, won 27 wooden spoons, which is a record. So I, much like you, don't have a lot of reason to follow football, yet I've been doing it for something like 35 years of my life. But I understand the idea. There have been times where I've thought, well, maybe I'll just jump ship, like, to another club. Maybe I'll pick a club that's more successful, that'll bring me some kind of joy. Have you felt like that in the last 10 years? Have you felt like, geez, maybe this was a mistake? Maybe I should be going to the Swans?
Yeah, I have, certainly. I was like, God, why don't I go for the Lions? I've certainly thought about it, but I couldn't do that to myself. I mean, I code hopped, you know, so that's good enough. I was following the Broncos and they're fucking woeful now. So, yeah.
So you've got no joy.
Changed sports entirely.
But it is, it's an interesting question around like fandom, isn't it? Because, you know, as my wife points out to me constantly, because she's she grew up in Scotland and not really into sport at all, where it was all Rangers and Celtics. And so she came out here, and when I sort of, you know, introduced her to my passion for AFL and passion for the Saints, she kind of was just like, I don't understand why this arbitrary choice makes you so miserable. You know, like, A, you don't have any involvement in the wins and losses, and also you can stop at any time. You can just stop following him. You can, like, delete the app from your phone, just not watch the games. And it's a strange thing, isn't it? Like, I've been trying to work out over the course of this series as I chat to different people about their clubs, is what is it that brings you back, especially you? You know, that's my opening question of why. Like, what's in it for you?
That's a really good question. I think I really enjoy the pace of the game now, and also the length of the game. It's really, really an event. Mm. I love also the club song and the history that I'm really learning about. I find that quite addictive. Also, I mean, as I sort of said before, like, a lot of my friends watch it, so it's a good reason to hang out with your buddies and have a beer and and yell at the TV screen or players. So I think, yeah, they'd be the ones, I reckon.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, there's a lot of my friends where we would not actually talk ever if it wasn't for the AFL. Like, that's 100% what our relationship is built around.
It's also fantasy too for me. And that's a very social thing as well. Yeah.
The fantasy football.
AFL fantasy, yeah.
Yeah, can now look, no, this is the thing. So we have a lot of listeners to this show who often ask us if we could start up like a fantasy football league or whatever. I don't understand how it works. Can you just sort of give me like the thumbnail sketch of what fantasy football is?
You get a salary cap. I forgot what exactly it is at the beginning. And then you essentially buy players. You field a whole team. And then you get two reserves in each line. So you've got defense, mids, forwards, and rucks. And then essentially they accumulate points from handballs, tackles, kicks, goals. What else do they get? I think that's it off the top of my head. Surely there's something else. Whereas Supercoach, you accumulate points for sort of like meters gained and more about how you actually play the game, rather than this is just more like stats on passing or kicking. And then essentially each player will accumulate a set of points, which will then give your whole team a set of points. And then each week you verse another person who's done the same thing in a league that you've built. So we've got this league called the Footy Cup, which has been going on now for maybe 8 years.
Right.
And we've got this pewter tankard that we got from France and then got sent like all around the world to get to us. We all chipped in to buy it, and we engrave the winner's name on the cup each year, and they then get to have the cup. And they're the only ones that can drink from it for that year. so that's it. Yeah. Quite fun.
So it's a stats-based game. So you're picking players based on not necessarily the best players, but the players who do best in a certain area, right?
Yeah, you essentially want midfielders, so ones that have that are in the center essentially, that follow the ball. So CBA is really important.
So what does CBA mean?
Sorry?
What does CBA stand for?
Like center ball attendance. I think it stands for that. Right. Center ball.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yep.
Yeah? Is that right? I think it's that. And you want someone who tackles a lot. You sort of essentially want someone who kicks goals because there are a lot of points. But you essentially want midfield time. So like Callum Mills, for instance, who's generally a defender, but he's in the mids now for the Swans. Like Matty Rowe was great. Who else? Dusty Martin.
I imagine would be, awesome. I mean, I think the thing, the problem for me with that kind of game is that I'm so one-eyed. Like, I don't think I pay attention to enough players from other teams. I have like a general idea of other players, but I'd be stacking my team with Saints players because they're the only ones I really pay any attention to.
You'd lose. you can't do that. Who's a Saint player that's good? There's not many. There's some good. So you've got to find rookies as well.
Right.
So Highmore from the Saints at the moment, he's in my team.
Yeah. Is that because it's a balance of he's cheap to get in, but his stats have a high payoff?
Yes. And then you want him, he'll increase in price. So that's how you make money. And then you sell him off when he's sort of his price is inflated. Then you sort of drop down to a rookie, you make money, and then you upgrade someone else to a better player. So like, you know, McRae from the Bulldogs, killing it at the moment. Zach Merritt from Essendon.
It's actually a good way for a guy who is not, you know, who didn't grow up with AFL to learn about the sport. Like, it's actually sort of bringing you in because you're paying attention to all the, I mean, you probably know more about that stuff than I do, really, because I'm like, so I don't know anything about the CBA, but now I guess it would make sense. It's like, okay, so who's getting to the most ball ups? But it sounds very, like the Brownlow, very midfield biased. So is there something to do like with defensive acts, like spoils and that kind of thing? Pressure points? No,
No, I think that's more super coach. So like how the game, how you play the game rather than sort of how many times you're touching the ball. I'm not sure about super coach so much, but I know that players sort of differ in that sense. Your rucks are always good too, but they're, you know, they're in the centre as well, hitting the ball.
Yeah.
Like your Max Gawn, your Brody Grundy.
So to go back to when you decided to go for the Suns, how long was it before you actually able to attend a game in person?
Look, I think, where was it? I think the first one I attended would have been the MCG, I think.
Right.
I think, and so it would have been maybe a year. It was just when I was in Melbourne for work. It wasn't too far from the beginning, but it was far enough. I think it was against Carlton and we got absolutely spanked. That was my first game and I sat right up under the roof.
Yeah.
Was it Eddie had at the time, and I had my son's curtains on actually, but it was quite cold, so I had a jacket. And as soon as I could see we were getting spanked in the first quarter, I put it on, zipped it up. I think I left by third quarter as well. So, but my first good memory was it was a trial match against the Lions, and I went to Metricon for the first time and sat next to Charlie Dixon, actually.
Yeah, right.
Who now plays for Port Adelaide. So I got a bit of insight into what players don't like each other. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
It was interesting, actually, before you were sort of naming all the players that had got injured, you know, that you felt like derailed the initial push for the Suns. And most of those players now all play for other clubs like Jaeger, Dixon, Prestia, all those kind of guys. Did you have any kind of resentment towards that, to the fact that other clubs were sort of using the Suns basically as like a feeder organisation?
Not really. I sort of always knew it was going to happen. And the culture wasn't helping it, like we sort of spoke about. The conditioning certainly wasn't. Like, those players aren't getting injured that much, or Jaeger did, I think. It's always going to happen. But I think hopefully now, sort of we've started again fresh with Stewie Jew.
Yeah.
I think he's quite excellent. We won't lose them.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think on that? Do you think we might lose them?
I keep referencing Making Their Mark. It's such a fascinating documentary. But I think a lot of footy clubs are really built around buy-in from players. And to get a player, to get your team to buy in, you've got to have a pretty charismatic, likable coach. And of all the coaches that they focus on in this series, Stewie Jew comes off the best. He is just so goddamn likable. And his philosophy is very straightforward, very simple. Like, he just feels like, if you grew up around footy clubs, doesn't matter what code it was, you know this guy. Like, he just feels like one of those guys that you would always see at training, you know, bringing the balls out in the bag, or, you know, he putting the pies in the pie warmer on Wednesday night or whatever it is. Like, he's just got this fantastic balance of making it seem really simple and fun, but also mentoring these young men. Like, he seems to be acutely aware of the fact that he has all these guns, you know, they've topped up with high draft picks again, and they've brought in a couple of like really good experienced players like Ellis and Greenwood, or whatever the guy's name is from Adelaide. But he seems to have like a really good understanding of, okay, if we can just keep this group together, I think there's something pretty special. And the fact that you got Raoul and Anderson and King to re-sign really early is a really good sign. And I think you guys have shown enough, like, it's kind of like what happened with the Giants. Like, you know, they were getting raided every year by other teams, like, you know, players are getting poached and stuff. But there was enough core group who kind of, they stick together. And I've seen it happen with other clubs, especially like premiership winning teams like Geelong have done at Hawthorn, where the players kind of make like an unofficial pact that they're going to stick together in order to get a premiership. And maybe that means, you know, they're not getting the highest pay packet. But, you know, it's more holistic than just wins and losses and paydays and playing in front of big crowds. Like, you, everyone wants to belong. I think everyone wants to feel like they're part of something. And it's just how well the coach can sell that message. And I think Stridu is selling the message to the guys. It's not necessarily a kind of anti, you know, anti-authority, fuck you, you know, we're the small fish. It's actually a different approach. It's much more of a footy is fun. You know, you guys have got the talent. You know, you're clearly good because you're high draft picks. You just need to condition yourselves and get your bodies right and don't focus on wins or losses. So I think the Suns have a really bright future. It just depends. I mean, COVID is such a, you know, spanner in the works. Like, you know, last year, if anything, it should have worked in the Suns' favour because of all the games being played in Queensland. But now they're talking about relocating the Suns to Adelaide. So who knows? Like, it just
because of the latest COVID spike.
Yeah, because of what's happening in Brisbane. So they're talking about getting, I think they actually got this. So they got Brisbane already in Melbourne. So they kept them in Melbourne and relocated the game that was meant to happen on Thursday night against the Pies. And the Suns, they were talking about, maybe they've even done it, moving them to Adelaide and putting them away from Queensland and then rejigging their schedule. So it just depends. Like, they're a very young side. I just hope that the board doesn't jump its shadows, because I guess one of the things, one of the benefits of having like a small kind of supporter base is you're not going to get people burning their memberships on your doorstep, or like, you know, like Stridu, you can be left alone to kind of get things done for a while. I think if, you know, maybe not this year, but in the next couple of years, I reckon they would be making finals. And it's just the RAL equation. Like, I feel bad putting so much, such responsibility on an 18-year-old or 19-year-old. But, you know, he could be anything. And, you know, if you look at Richmond, are a great team. But Dusty Martin is just a once-in-a-generation player. Like, I think it'd be impossible to be a bad team if you had Dustin Martin playing for you.
That's very true. Just on that Rowell thing. I mean, since Rowell's been injured, Anderson gets to step up now. We get to see what he's made of.
36.
Super underrated at the moment.
Didn't he have like 36 touches last week or against North Melbourne?
Matched it.
Yeah. No.
I mean, against North Melbourne, but.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But it's interesting too, like, even that philosophy behind why they drafted Rowell and Anderson, you know, this idea that they're best mates, they love playing footy together. Like, I think that, you know, we sort of were feeling around for what is the culture of the Suns, and you're saying, well, you know, it's a bit hard to sort of pin it down because it's been such a radical change from the first, you know, 5 or 6 years. But maybe that's what Stewie Jew is trying to build. Like, maybe that will be the culture of the Suns, which is, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's almost the opposite to the reputation of the Gold Coast. Like, if they make it like a very, like the family club, real kind of like, you know, supportive, kind of just back to basics, not flashy at all. Like, I think that'd be a really interesting dichotomy to have that be the culture of the Gold Coast.
Yeah, that's very true. Certainly what a Gold Coast team needs as well. I think that's what's lacked in any other code that a Gold Coast team has been in.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, Tony Cochran is such an interesting character too, because he did this interview last year that I just was obsessed with, where he went on like the front foot. He just was like taking no shit from anyone, like was not taking any shit from the journalist, any suggestion that, you know, a team doesn't belong on the Gold Coast. And he kept referring to Melbourne as Mel Boring, like a 12-year-old. But I think that's brilliant. Like, I think you need passion like that. And he is someone who kind of, he obviously, he's eccentric, but I think that you need a guy like that to make the big choices. I think where the Suns maybe lost their way a bit was, you know, Bluey McKenna didn't really work out. So they got a bit scared so they went for Rodney Eade, who was just a bit too old.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think he went backwards there. The game had passed him by.
Why did they get rid of Guy McKenna?
Impatient, I think.
Yeah.
You know, they probably expected to be playing finals earlier. And I think probably back then the AFL would probably had more of a say in what was going on at the Suns. When they're setting them up. Now they're probably left to their own devices a bit more, but I think...
Because I actually thought he was building that culture that Stewie Jew now is, and then it's, once we got rid of him, Ablett went down, the team went down.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Like, it could be that. It could have been the board lost patience with him. He could have been difficult to work with. The thing that is undeniable about Stewie Jew is that everyone there seems to love him and seems to have time for him. So, look, you just need some luck as well. I think that, you know, if you guys could win between 8 to 10 games this year, I reckon he'd be safe. But if they have a year where they don't win more than, say, 5 games, then maybe, you know, it's just unsustainable. I mean, I don't even know who your board is. I don't know who he's answering to. It's a strange kind of... I don't even know how many members they have at the Suns. Do you?
No, I don't.
Would you?
I just know Mick Fanning's one of them, I think, isn't he?
Mick Fanning? Why have I got you on this show? I could have had bloody Mick Fanning.
I don't know.
Oh, my God. No, I'm very glad to have you.
Not too late to get him on, yeah, for sure. I think he was like the number one ticket holder.
Really? I do remember watching one broadcast of the game, and they cut to the stands, and there was Dolph Lundgren. He was sitting up there eating an ice cream, and I was like, this feels very Gold Coast. Like, not Gold Coast Suns, but very Gold Coast, that you got Dolph Lundgren up in the stands watching the Suns.
Yeah.
I mean, it does feel like, you know,
Is my audio okay?
Yeah.
Is it a bit choppy?
No, it's coming through. No, it's fine. I think a bit more of that kind of stuff is not bad for the Suns, like, you know, a bit more Dolph Lundgren kind of action, because you need sort of something to kind of distinguish, like, to get people to be aware, like, outside of, you know, there's that Victorian bubble where, you know, outside of maybe a Sydney or a West Coast, you know, even not even Port Adelaide, who finished on top of the ladder last year, get much press in Melbourne. So for the Suns, it was all about Matt Rowe. But now that he's not playing, there needs to be another angle. It'd be great if it is Noah Anderson. I mean, you know, like every Michael Jordan needs a Scottie Pippen, right?
You got Isaac Rankin too, who's playing pretty amazingly well.
Isaac Rankin. The most exciting first 3 games of any player I can remember. Just such a phenomenal player, but also, like, carries himself like a rock star. Like, there is that thing about him where when you used to play junior footy, there was always that dude who maybe only got 4 touches for a game, but would kick one from the boundary line. That's all you would need from him.
Sure.
And I think that's Isaac Rankin. And it's also a good sign, too, that Ben King decided to stay as well, because I know the Saints were pushing real hard to get him back with his brother. They both grew up barracking for the Saints. And, you know, that was in a period when it felt like the Suns were losing everyone. And then the Saints came along, after his first year, and were, you know, inquiring about getting him back. But then he signs that long-term deal. I mean, I imagine the Suns had quite a bit of money in the salary cap to give him. But I do think that, you know, for the next 3 years, you've got the spine of a really, really good side, but it's just, can you keep them healthy?
It's been the ongoing thing since we started. And also just not, like, we got Barlow, we got Michael Barlow.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I still don't understand why, but we got Barlow and Malcheski.
Yeah.
Just bizarre, expensive picks, I thought, which...
I think it's about putting experienced, mature bodies around your developing players. I mean, that's philosophy. I think what you've done with...
But not injury prone.
Yeah, that's true. A guy with a broken leg is not really going to find his best form at his second club. But he's actually really interesting. I've heard him talk about the Suns quite a bit, Barlow, and he's gone into commentary now, and he's really complimentary about that club. I didn't realize you guys didn't even have proper training facilities for the first 5 years. It was like demountables.
Wow, I didn't know that. Wow. Like,
yeah. Well, that would explain the injuries, probably.
Totally.
I like to ask people on this show about their happiest memory to do with their club. Is there one particular game or moment that stands out in your mind as your best memory to do with the Suns?
Yeah, it was when we first our first win, when Carmichael Hunt kicked that winning goal.
Yeah.
And I got to sing the song for the first time.
Oh my God.
that to me, I was with my brother as well. He doesn't really support AFL, but
yeah.
That for me also, Carmichael Hunt being from the Broncos as well, was just sort of a dream moment.
It really was.
Dream moment for me.
I mean, it seems crazy that like they didn't go on from there. Like it's just, it seems like such a fairy tale moment. You think it would just inspire them to greater heights, but then I guess injuries.
And we beat, it was Richmond who we beat as well. And I think we did it like three games in a row, we beat Richmond.
Yeah. Look, but that's not the Richmond of today. That was back when Richmond were notorious for losing games.
I'll still take it though.
The bizarre circumstances. Now, this might be a difficult question to answer, but do you have a lowest point? Is there a moment where you were like, oh, geez, what am I even doing?
Yeah, probably like majority of the years following them.
Really?
Being on the bottom of the ladder. Look, I think the biggest one was, yeah, when Ablett went down. And then he went down again, and we just couldn't. And the realization that we were a one-man team as well the first time he went down, that was a pretty gutting feeling.
Was there any resentment from you that he went back to the Cats? Did you think he was going to be a son for life?
No, I always knew he would, especially when there was no sort of light at the end of the tunnel for winning another premiership.
Mm.
I thought it was a wise choice.
From him.
And also, yeah, he didn't have to carry a club. He could sort of sit forward a bit more and sort of chill out.
Yeah. And you think a guy like that too is also like he's obviously driven by success. You know, I think that, you know, it's the same reason that Cats fans weren't particularly upset when he left to go to the Suns in the first place because he'd won two flags with the Cats and you felt like he'd given his all. I don't think anyone can say that Gary Ablett didn't give his all to the Suns. I mean, he won a Brownlow while he was playing for the Suns, which is extraordinary.
He probably would have won two if he didn't get injured. I think he was on top of the votes until he went down. Yeah. And to carry a team, to do it essentially all by yourself, really. Like,
well, that was
it is quite remarkable.
Excuse me. That was the Saints in the 80s. So Tony Lockett, before he played for the Swans, was a Saint.
Oh.
And he won a Brownlow playing for the Saints. He kicked 100 goals like three times playing for the Saints. And my memory growing up would be very similar to what it was like for you, is you just go to the game to see Tony Lockett play. Like, we had other good players, but it was the plugger show. And you think that when that guy leaves, because he eventually went to the Swans, that, well, what's a club going to do? He's the best player we've got. But it's actually a great thing for a club to happen because you realise it is a team sport. And the best teams, like Richmond, do have Dusty. But ultimately, they have buy-in from every other player on the ground.
Yeah.
And I think that that's maybe what you're going to get with the Suns in a post-Ablett era. I mean, maybe is you want Matt Rowell to be what we all hope he's going to be, but what is more important is that those players around him sort of also elevate as well.
Yeah. It's good to have that clutch player that in a desperate moment, like a Buddy or a Dusty, will turn it around like Dusty did in the grand final last year, you know. But yeah, you're right. You need your Pippins too.
Yeah.
To support your Jordans.
Well, those two, like Anderson and Rowell together, like who knows what they could be. Just like draft pick one and two, best mates. If you just get Rowell, just get him back on the ground. We just wanted to get him healed up and back on the ground.
When's he due back? It's like 12 weeks, I think, right?
Yeah, that's ACL. Right. 3 months, yeah. That's what they're saying. It's just so disappointing for the guy because like, he obviously lives and breathes football and I mean, it was interesting.
You can see him taking notes as well in his little notebook.
He's such a footy nerd. In the Making Their Mark, there's this great sequence where to keep him occupied and keep his spirits up while he's recuperating from his shoulder, the fitness and conditioning coach sets him this challenge to ride up Everest. So they have these like stationary bikes, but with this like computer screen, you can program in the incline of Everest. And so it's like a 16-hour ride. Stewie Jew starts like 4 hours before them. And that's the most amazing part is like, you know, you can sort of imagine Matt Rowell and a like a fitness and conditioning coach doing it okay, but to see Stewie Jew.
Stewie Jew's doing it?
Yeah, he completes it. Like it takes him probably a few hours more than those guys, but he is on that bike. He starts at like 2 a.m. on a Tuesday and doesn't finish till like, you know, 1 a.m. on a Thursday. Like it takes him, it's crazy. But Matt Rowell gets on and just smashes it. Like it's unbelievable how, you know, like it's almost like Terminator. Like he just gets on the bike, picks his target, and then rides up Everest in 16 hours and just like smashes a record. It's just it's incredible to watch. And again, it's like,
wow,
who is this kid? Why can't we see him on the field? It just seems like such a tease that, you know, we all know he could be so great, but he just gets these two goddamn injuries. We just want to see him on the park.
Is this on Netflix?
It's on Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime.
I highly recommend it. It's a Suns supporter. I didn't know anything about the Suns prior to watching this. And I like I said, Stewie Jew is now like my favorite coach in the AFL. I just think he's so great.
Is there footage of him yelling at them in the change room?
Yes.
Okay.
There is one moment where he yells at them. I can't remember what he's yelling at, but he's like, why is everyone acting so fucking surprised?
Yeah, I saw that pop up somewhere. Oh, yeah, I tried to find it. Oh, yeah, I'll check it out. Excellent.
My last question, Josh, is generally about if your team was to fold. So if the Suns, like so many other Gold Coast teams, were to fold, do you think that you would find another team to follow?
Yeah, I'd pick maybe the Lions, but I'd probably, just so I can go to more games and I live in Sydney, I'd probably have to pick the Swans. It irks me to say that, but
not tempted to go to GWS?
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to think about it.
Well, it's interesting because you said the two options you've given yourself are the Swans and Brisbane, but you look physically in pain by both those choices. Like, they don't seem to be very appealing.
The Giants doesn't really appeal to me either. It's a good one. I've got friends who go for the Giants. I like to find a team that I just support so I can really give it to people if and when they win. I guess everyone, as I said, follows the Swans. But yeah, maybe the Lions. But I wouldn't go to enough games. I don't know. I don't like this question.
Not many people do. It's actually interesting that the answers, it's people sort of range between having like easily jumping across to another side to walking away from footy altogether. I mean, it's something that I wrestle with because the Saints have come very close many times to folding. And I don't know. I think I would probably walk away from football for a bit. I'd be heartbroken. I think, you know, the fact of just seeing, like when Fitzroy, before they merged to become the Lions, you know, I had a few friends who were Fitzroy supporters and it was devastating to them. You know, it's kind of the stuff I try and explain to my wife about what being a footy fan's all about. It's not just about wins and losses. It's about, you know, the history you have and, you know, going to the games with your family and hanging out with your friends. And there's so much tied into it that is part of your identity to just to see a club just fold or to see the AFL let a club fold or just make an arbitrary decision to relocate your club because it's more financially viable. I can understand how that would take your heart out of the game or make you reconsider, you know, why you follow football in the first place.
Yeah, I can really see it actually, how it would affect you.
Yeah. But having said that, I might also just jump on the back of Richmond and actually enjoy a premiership for once in my life because I've been to four grand finals for not one victory, Josh. I tell you what, it sucks. It sucks.
Sorry to hear that, mate.
But I'm very hopeful about the Suns. Like I said, I think Stewie Jew's a great coach and we just all want to see Matt Rowell on the field. So do you have any predictions before we go for season 2021? We're away. You're 1-1. What do you think is the end of the year look like for the Suns?
COVID hits again and the game gets shut down. No, I'm I predict, or I hope, you know, always a top eight finish. Even if we finish ninth, I think you got to go for gold. Hopefully eighth.
That'd be great.
I can't see it happening. I think we missed the finals, but we certainly improved on last year.
Okay, well, let's...
It's going to be difficult without Raoul.
I'll make it easier for you. What is a pass mark, in your opinion, for this year?
Yeah, without Raoul now, I reckon ninth. Like, just missing the finals, but having a hope, like, we can do it, I think is a massive improvement on where we've been.
I agree.
Which will take us into 2022. With a lot more confidence.
And then in 2023 at the MCG on the last day in September, we all hear that famous club song, which goes, how's it going?
Dun, 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 dun. We are the sons of the Gold Coast. Oh, my God. Make me sick.
Josh, thanks so much for your time and good luck to the Suns.
No worries, buddy.
We are two guys, one car.